So if you have gold, silver, watches, art, cryptos, businesses, real estate, diamonds, yada, yada, and you're discreet about where they are placed and how you control those, and you don't go on social media doing lives, goading the system, you're probably going to be all right.
Good to see you. All right, welcome to another episode of Life Talk. I am so excited today because it's been 2 years that Rob Moore, who's in front of me right now, said, "Jesse, I'm gonna come see you," and he's here right now. You know, we've done, I think, two podcasts, we've done a couple lives. It's been a long time. You didn't even know I moved to Marbella. You didn't even know my office was here. You didn't even know I had an agency here.
No, I was here, and you just messaged me out of the blue going, "Bro, you're in Marbella. Why are we meeting up?"
I'm like, "Yeah, Luke mentioned it." And I'm like, "What?"
Yeah.
And you didn't even know.
No.
So, but again, I'm so happy you're here. Very good to see you. You don't really need an introduction. I mean, we've done for the people listening as well, we've done a couple lives, we've done a couple podcasts, and the last one was 2 years ago. I listened back to it, and there was so much value in it that I think, for the people that haven't listened to it, please listen to that one first, because I want to elaborate on some topics from it. And back then, it was the Clubhouse time, which is also the time that we met. And I want to ask you, how have you been and how are you now?
Yeah, good. So the last 3 years has been an absolute whirlwind. 2020 BC, before COVID.
Yeah.
It's like you could really take life for granted. And one thing that COVID taught me was you cannot take life for granted. You must not take life for granted. You know, we were rolling, business was good. At the time, I think we had nearly 150 staff, of which 105 of them were in the office. And little did we know that our entire world was going to be shaken upside down, that we were going to have to go and hide in the kitchen with a laptop with everyone's name and say, "Right, we've got to fire them. Yeah, but they've got a family. They've just had a baby. They've just got a mortgage. No, we need to let them go. And it was an insane time. And a mentor of mine, Dr. John DeMartini, he believes that wisdom is in simultaneously seeing the equal upsides and downsides in any situation. And when that kicked off, it was very difficult to see any upsides. You know, we were being locked away. I really felt like we were being fed propaganda. I really did, like, early on. I mean, you know, the first few weeks, fair play. You know, you never know, do you? But it became pretty apparent that this was not right. And I was angry. And, you know, make someone angry and caged, and that's not a good recipe.
Yeah.
And, you know, my ability to trade and run a business was made illegal and taken away from me. And I was shouting and screaming then that this is going to last 10 years. And if you think we're out of this, and if you think that you're not going to be paying for this for the next 10 years, you need to wake up. But we navigated that. We turned the business around. Business is brilliant now. We're on for between 22 and 25 million in sales in our training business. Our real estate portfolio, we had two developments, probably 210 tenants.
I have the stats actually in front of me here. So I remember 2 years ago, it was 990 properties, 140 developments you were involved in.
So it would be 990 tenants.
Tenants.
And 140 units we were developing.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, back when we talked, that would have been up in the air.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if the government said, "Right, you've got to down tools, you're not allowed to build," we'd still have to pay our bank back hundreds of thousands of pounds a month, wouldn't we? They're not going to go, "Oh, have a holiday, don't worry about it." But thankfully, we're able to build through. We developed those. They're all done. Now I'm here in Marbella. I had someone challenged me to a fight online, and I trained for 6 months, and I fought someone 20 kilos heavier than me, and it was a great experience. And I'm here now just, you know, taking a bit of a breather, setting my next challenge. I'm writing my book at the moment, Money Matrix. So, you know, there's a lot to be, a lot can happen in 2 years.
I don't even know where to start.
Yeah.
Let's start at the fight. So you finished the fight?
Yeah. Yeah. So I've never fought before.
Yeah.
And someone on a podcast called me out for a fight. He said, oh, you reckon you can challenge me for a fight? Let's do this. And at the time, he was about 118 kilos and I was 88. So, you know, I'm giving away a lot. You know, that's 5-6 weight divisions in boxing. It's not the done thing. But I was like, you know what? If you're not careful, life can get comfortable. And if you're not careful, you can wake up and you're like, shit, I'm 50. Where did the last 30 years go? And so I've always felt it really important to disrupt your own life. Otherwise, someone's going to disrupt it for you. So I thought, you know what? Fuck it. Let's do this. I was a bit naive, if I'm honest. He negotiated really well. He got all the chips in his favor. You know, he got no head guard, 12-ounce gloves, small ring, 3 rounds. You know, he got everything he wanted like a spoiled child. I just wanted to get it done. And yeah, I got in the ring with him and I banged. Everyone thought I'd just sort of jab away and run away from him for 3 rounds. But no, I went toe to toe with a tank. And look, it was really close, really close. There was a very suspect lockdown, which meant I lost the first round 10-8. It wasn't really. But they have to be safe in white collar. I get it. And I lost on points. But the only thing I lost was the fight. Everything else, the reputation, we raised 250 grand for charity. We filled the venue with 1,750 people. We entertained the fuck out of them. Everyone loved it. So, you know, I won in every area, but I lost in the fight.
Wow.
No regrets, man.
Oh, I mean, that's beautiful, man. So that's quite popular now, right? People challenging each other. And
Yeah, look at Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg. Yeah,
that's happening now as well.
Yeah, it's like if there's any beef, right, let's just fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this was popularized by the Paul brothers. And it's never been done in our industry. You know, you could say, oh, everyone's doing it, but not everyone's doing it. But, you know, no one in our property investing industry had ever done anything like this. And you know, my opponent made a good adversary. He's like the panto villain. You know, he played really good, the villain. He's great at the shit talk.
Yeah.
He came out and he was trolling and he was goading me. And when we were fighting, he was, talking to me. And he's, oh, you got a bitch and all this. And he actually made for a really good show. You know, life's short and it's too short to hate people. And, you know, everyone was like, oh, is the beef real? Yeah, the beef was real. But, you know, we hugged, we shook hands, we raised $250,000. And maybe we'll do it again sometime. But next time we do it on my terms. We do it long rounds, my weight. Like, I fought someone 5 weight divisions above me. You know, and apparently that's stupid. Apparently that, you know, that gave him a big advantage. But, yeah, a lot can happen.
I love it, man. So after, like Clubhouse, like you were, when... I mean, remember when we were on there, we had a lot of conversations like off Clubhouse where you asked me a lot about the crypto and the NFTs that you were starting.
Mm.
Like, did you continue that? Did you actually end up doing that?
Yeah. So I launched my own series of NFTs. I made 26 NFTs only. And they were anywhere from 9,000 to 25,000 pounds. As an entrepreneur,
yeah.
I've seen trends come and go. And, you know, NFTs look like it could be huge or it could be over.
Yeah.
So for me, it was really important not to just sell a digital picture of an animal for, you know, tens of thousands of pounds, but to actually have intrinsic value. So what I did was, there was a physical piece of art. Yeah, there was the NFT image. But there was my plan is to give people a lifetime of unlockable bonuses and benefits so that, you know, what they pay is a small investment that they get a return on. So yeah, I launched my NFTs. I mean, you know, I think it's important to do what you say you're going to do. You know, there's a lot of people in this world that have got a lot of chat, but not a lot of substance. So, you know, I've been an entrepreneur now for nearly 20 years and I've seen a lot of people come and go. And yeah, you know, if you want to stay in the game for a long time, you can talk a good game, but you've got to deliver.
And we had a lot of conversations about crypto, and
you
always said, Jesse, I want to call you, I want to reach out to you, I want to learn about it. You were in crypto way before me, and I think when we had those conversations, like there was a lot that I could learn from you, especially when I first started getting into property and real estate. I learned a lot from you. You were disruptive in the UK as like nobody else. And then we had these conversations and you asked me like about crypto, and you even said like I could have 10x'd my net worth if I would have gone into Bitcoin, if I would have gone into this earlier.
Yeah.
And you understood very clearly like, hey, we need to humble ourselves and really understand that when there's people in our circle that are adapting early in certain projects or crypto or investments, that we need to sit back and listen and see what we can take from that. And I really love that you always did that. As somebody who's already like had made his millions and still like sit down and listen. Like, and even last week, I sat with one of my friends here in Puerto Banús. He's a billionaire. And when I always sit with him, I listen, and I'm truly inspired by the lessons that he has been given and now is giving to me. And I think that's always a very important approach that I always admired in you. And you always explained that even in our previous podcast, listening to it before, you said, nah, I gotta sit and listen. And you've been in this crypto game before. Have you actually, and this is my question to you, implemented some of the things we talked about? Have you allocated some of your fiat currency into cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, so this is a really pertinent time to discuss this, because I'm currently about halfway through my new book, which is called Money Matrix. I've written 18 books, and I'm more now specializing in the subject of money.
Yeah.
And I think we're on the edge of a revolution. You know, there's talk of a digital central currency, which I would absolutely resist. I would resist at all costs a central digital currency. So on the one hand, you've got the government's
happening in China. Is it like where you have it all? Like,
well, I mean, let's wait and see. Yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of talk about it. And for me, that ends badly for most of society. So you've got this sort of struggle and this revolution between centralization and globalization, and then decentralization and a fight for freedom. So a central digital currency would be a move towards centralization. And Bitcoin and other cryptos are a move away from centralization towards decentralization. And generally, you anarchists and people who believe in autonomy and freedom are the people that start these independent currencies. So we're at a really disruptive time where you're going to look back and you're going to go, shit, do you remember 2020? You know, do you remember 2023? Now, so there's a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
The problem with emotion is it makes you do stupid things. You know, I had dinner with someone in Marbella, actually, the last time I was here, and he said, I've got 100% of my net worth in crypto. And actually, it's in one cryptocurrency.
I think that was me.
It's not you. I mean, that is, it's HEX, the currency is. Yeah?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And honestly,
I know what you're talking
about. That's fucking kamikaze to do that. It is kamikaze to have all of your wealth in one platform, one bank, one asset. What if you had all your wealth in FTX and then bang, Sam Bankman-Fried goes and, you know, spends it all? So I think that if you want to be successful, you've got to know what you know and know what you don't know in a very self-honest way. Because a lot of people, they're either too humble, i.e. they think they know nothing when they actually do know something, or they're too arrogant when they think they know more than they do. And if you can be self-honest and go, do you know what? I'm good at that. I'm not good at that. It's okay. You know, I'm not arrogant by saying I'm good at that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not useless by saying I'm shit at that. So, you know, I know much more about traditional assets. I'm older. I'm 44. I know much more about traditional assets than I do these new disruptive assets. So I'll go and find people who know about these more disruptive assets. The problem when you've got new assets and new disruptions is you've got people who know a bit and they're fucking dangerous. You know, you've got 19 and 21-year-old kids becoming 100 millionaires and billionaires in crypto. And, you know, it's like these kids who go around on podcasts who are 21 years old giving dating advice. Like if you want relationship advice, speak to a couple who are 80 years old. You know, speak to a couple who've been through it. Like a 21-year-old does not know shit about, you know, holding down a long-term relationship, but people think they do. So there's all this shit you've got to filter to work out where the truth is. So if you want to build vast and lasting wealth, there are some fundamental rules. Then there are stages to it. You know, you need to be able to make it. Once you've made it, you need to be able to manage it. Once you manage it, you need to be able to multiply it. And then once you've been able to multiply it, you need to be able to maintain it, ensure it. So making it is getting into new business models, new asset classes, of which, you know, Bitcoin, Ethereum, HEX, NFTs, you know, all of these is one of them. But that's only one stage, because anyone can make a million and lose a million. So since all these new cryptos came about, I did invest a bit more into Bitcoin, and I did diversify into, let's say, about three other cryptos, Ethereum, HEX, and then a couple of more speculative, what you might call shy coins. But understood that at my stage in life and my risk threshold, it should never really be more than 5%. And, you know, you can only go big in a volatile asset class if you are young and you have time to recover from financial losses. So, you know, something else I've learned. So, you know, my investing strategy is quite simple. It's buy, hold, die. And I've never really regretted missing opportunity, because there's always new opportunity. But the one thing I've nearly always regretted is selling. You know, so I bought in at Bitcoin at 5,000. I think I sold at 15,000. I actually sold a lot of my Bitcoin in the lockdown because of, you know, the fear was palpable and I was feeling everyone else's fear. I've got a significant watch collection. And I, for example, I had a Patek Philippe. I paid 25 for it. I sold 35 for it. It peaked at 150 in the lockdown. A Richard Mille I bought for 75. I sold for 85. They're 180 now. So most of my bad investments are selling, because, you know, when you sell, you pay tax, you lose the long-term benefit. So, you know, I think if your goal is to build wealth, you need to know what your risk threshold is. You need to have a strategy. And you need to diversify. And importantly, in the times that we're in, I think it's really important that you have some decentralized asset classes. So what people love about Bitcoin is it's decentralized. It's unmanipulatable, unfuckwithable, you know, but from the government. You can't intervene in it. You can't hack it. You can't break it. You can't control it. You can't inflate it. You can't steal it. You know, and that's why people love, those that love Bitcoin, that's why they love Bitcoin. Yeah, gold, watches, are very much like that. They're physical, they're real. Real estate in the Western world is like that. You know, you have good ownership rights in the Western world. I mean, not in, you own businesses or real estate in China, you get too good, they'll take it off you. But not in the Western world, you know, there'd be a revolution.
Is it really?
Yeah,
I think if the system, the government, this the matrix, if you will, wants to take your assets, they will take.
This is why you need to be diversified.
Exactly. So, but the idea that real estate is a hard asset that they can't take.
Oh, it's well,
like, and that's why, like, I don't know if you know Luc Belmar. We had a conversation about why he doesn't invest in real estate, and he clearly said, "Well, because what you think is yours is not really yours. It is a lie. It is yours." Similar to the analogy for women, it is just your turn. You know, I had especially with the success that was growing in my early 20s, or my following, my status, or whatever you want to call it, and the influence I had. I saw that the amount of married women and the amount of women that in general that reach out and that were like in a relationship was concerning. And I think the more powerful you become,
as they're in a relationship and they're reaching out.
You had a podcast with Andrew, right?
Yeah.
Didn't he say, like, always asks for seeds. One of my friends in the UK, he had a safe where he had a ledger with his Bitcoin on it. The government, the police literally took it. Like they had it in his safe. And unfortunately, his private keys, everything was in the safe. But it just goes to show you that most of the assets that we think are assets are not really ours.
Yeah, I mean, I agree to a point. I think context is really important. If you live in a developing state in Africa, yeah, someone can just come and murder your tribe and rape your wives and take all your loot. They can. But there are some civilizations that are more civilized than that. And I think if you're not careful, you can become so skeptical of everything that you end up taking undue risks or end up... Yeah, so in the UK, property ownership rights, you know, technically you could argue, you know, that the king owns all the land. Mm-hmm. And the property. Technically, you could argue that. But if the king were to recall all the land and the gold and you were to own nothing and be happy, immediately they would be murdered. There would be riots and a revolution. So that's not going to happen. You know, money and assets are built on trust. And currencies and any kind of asset is only worth anything while there is trust. And once that trust is gone, it is worth nothing. So, you know, many societies and empires would break and would crumble if these extremities came into play. So,
but it's happening.
Well, it depends where you are. It's not happening in the UK.
Well, I know, but it happened to my friend. It's happening in the US.
No one I know in the UK is having their real estate confiscated from them.
I mean, it's system. If you go against the system, and the police will come, and again,
I think it depends.
If you have allegedly been accused of some criminal activity, true or false, they will come and seize it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, yes, in extreme cases, Andrew Tate, Nigel Farage, people who are publicizing paedophile rings or whatever, you know, if you are that well known and become that powerful, these things do happen. They're not uncommon. But there's a way to build wealth and not expose yourself to that risk. And I believe that is decentralization, which means you spread your wealth across as many assets as you can, and ideally, most of which you control. So in some ways, we're coming to the same discussion point.
Yeah.
So if you have gold, silver, watches, art, cryptos, businesses, real estate, diamonds, yada, yada, and you're discreet about where they are placed and how you control those, and you don't go on social media doing lives, goading the system, you're probably going to be all right.
Yeah.
You know, because these people, you know, who are essentially attacked or confiscated of their wealth, I believe they've probably had some warnings. You know, if you think about, imagine you're Andrew Tate and you figured out how to go viral on social media, which is to make very controversial statements and polarize people. I imagine you do that and you get warned.
I mean, he got banned.
Well, there you go. You know, the shadow bannings, the canceling, you know, there's probably an email that comes somewhere. There's probably a like,
yeah,
you're getting too big, motherfucker. You need to shut up.
Yeah.
And it's very difficult, I believe, how do you know where the line is until you've crossed it? And I imagine if you're gaining vast wealth and success and notoriety by being controversial and divisive, how do you stop? That becomes an addiction. Well, you know where the line is when you are wrongfully imprisoned, if he is wrongfully imprisoned. So, you know, look, it depends on your goals. But there are ways to ensure and protect your wealth. You know, have multiple passports. be as decentralized as you can across multiple assets. You know, this is what I'm writing about in my book. This is all what my book is about, Money Matrix. There's probably a dozen viable assets. So why risk an exposure? So, you know, I buy classic cars, I buy art. You could buy wine. I buy watches. I buy gold. I buy silver. Anything I can put my money in that is safe, secure, and discreet, I'm going to. And the more, like, I think, for example, putting your money in FTSE 100 or, you know, the Dow Jones, I believe that's much safer than having it in the bank. Because in the FTSE 100, it's diversified across 100 companies. In the bank, it's in one company, Barclays. And, you know, when Andrew Tate got cancelled, he told me that his bank accounts were seized, 11 million was seized, and he had to basically reveal everything, including his inside leg measurement, if he wanted to get his money back. And he said he wasn't able to do that, and he had to write off $11 million. That's what he said to me. But if he had $1 million in 11 bank accounts, or if he had, you know, $1 million in a bank account, but $10 million in other asset classes, he wouldn't have been as exposed.
I understand that. However, I also want to, like, because you talked about, like, you're going to get a warning. You're going to get warned, whether it's through banning on social media, whether it's like they're going to come to you and they're going to be like, hey, you're getting too big. You need to shut up. You're getting, get in line, boy, right? I think when we talk about disrupting, I think we talk a lot about money. And you, especially, you are very focused on it, especially now with the book that you're writing, which is amazing. But also, don't we have, and we talked in the last podcast, we talked about purpose. Is our purpose generational wealth or creating generational wealth? To me, it's a lot bigger than that. And I think what is beautiful about Andrew Tate and others that are speaking about the system as it is and what it's doing to us, to young men that are disenfranchised, I think that is so much bigger than just generating like money and then shutting up when the government tells you. I think that we have to stay close to God, I think, number one. And number two, we have to fight for justice. That's how I got in touch with Andrew and Tristan before they got arrested, was when we were actually in a group chat with Joe Exotic's team to get him out of prison. Because just, and we couldn't even talk about this in public because obviously we were just trying to like help in a way that wasn't publicized. And the reason why is because he was unlawfully in prison. There was a murder plot for hire that was instigated by the FBI. So, and I would expect my circle, my people, if I would ever get falsely accused or the government trying to get after me, the agents of the Matrix, so to speak, that my friends would back me, that my friends would show up, that my friends would do the same thing. And unfortunately, not quite soon after, the Tates themselves got arrested. So we never ended up like really going all the way with Joe Exotic, but we're still working on it. So my point is that we have a bigger purpose as a whole. We cannot just talk about money. There's so many more metrics to this life, just like health and God and purpose and everything, right? Financial freedom, 100% important, but and how to maintain it and diversify, 100% agree. However, as strong leaders, as disruptors of the system, I think we have a responsibility, Rob, to also not back down when the government tells us.
Yeah, I think I agree with you in your model of the world, i.e. the world that you see through your own lens. I think it's really important if you want to get the most out of life, because, you know, there are a lot of ifs here. Who are you? What do you want to be? What's your purpose here on this earth? And I think one of the most important things to do in life, assuming you want to live a meaningful life, is to continually ask, who am I and what am I meant to do with this life? You know, how can I live the most useful and valuable life? So, if we were to ask those questions as individuals and get clear, you're likely to be able to find a meaningful mission and purpose and make meaning to your life. And that's a very individual thing. To some people, being a nurse is their mission and meaning. To some people, being a civil servant is their mission and meaning. To some people, pushing back against the matrix and the system is their mission and meaning. So, my mission and meaning is to help as many people on this planet get better financial knowledge. That is my mission and meaning. Can I do that in prison very easily? Probably not. So if I am warned that I am, you know the game whack-a-mole, when the head comes up and you hammer it down, then another head comes up and you hammer it down. If my head's going too high and I'm being warned that the hammer's coming down, is it wise for me to keep running my mouth off or not? Probably not, if I want to fulfill my own mission. Because in some ways you are right, there is more to life than money. But if my vision is to help as many people on this planet get better financial knowledge, maybe there isn't. So I think we need to think, because you could do anything, but you can't do everything. And, you know, if you're, oh, that's wrong. If you just pop up and shout and scream about everything that's wrong in the world, no one's going to take you seriously. So if you believe that the system is corrupt, the system is unfair, the system is using you, you know, as a pawn. It's controlling and consuming from you. If you believe that to be the case, and you believe that to be fundamentally wrong, and our freedoms are being impinged, then you should speak up about it. But that takes a lot of courage, because there's a lot of risk involved in that. There's not a lot of risk about taking a 35 grand salary and being a nurse. It's not a lot of risk for that. But we need nurses. We need janitors. We need everyone. So in your model of the world, based on your own mission, I think it probably is important to stand up. Probably is important to speak out. Because the thing is, if we do not stand up and speak out, nothing will change. But what is it that you should be standing up and speaking out about? So for example, with me, some things I think are really wrong. Taxes, yeah. Far too high. Education in schools, out of date. You know, these are things that I think are fundamentally wrong. And it is my life's purpose and mission to change these. And I will keep banging the drum until I make these change. But it's much easier to make this change doing podcasts and writing books than it is sat in a prison cell.
Yeah, but I hear you. You do understand that while fighting, like, do you believe in God?
I don't know is the answer.
You don't know?
No, I don't know. I mean, look, do I, from scientific research, hear me out here. And by the way, you can troll me all you like. Hear me out here. Science seems to suggest that the universe is infinite, both in space and time, it seems to suggest. So is it therefore plausible that there is a higher power and order, another species, a creator? Is all of that plausible? Absolutely. I mean, it's more plausible that there is that than there isn't that, in my humble opinion. Where I have a difficulty in religion is that there are dozens of manifestations of God. And who's right? And it seems to depend where you're born as to what your God is. And if you ask people what is their definition of God, it's very personal and individual. I don't believe it is my right to question your beliefs. If you're living a purposeful life and you're net positive to humanity, who am I to question your opinions and beliefs? But if you want to come and chunder over my face what I should believe, you can back the fuck up. I'm 44. I'm a student, but I've also learned some stuff. And like, take my boxing, for example. There are X amount of known variables you can control, and there are infinite amounts of unknown variables you can't control. So I try and focus on what do I know and what can I control? And how can I be the most useful to society and find a purpose and meaning and stay in that lane and do my best? And then everything else, you know, I'm just trying to figure it out like the rest of us.
I love that. So what I hear from when you speak, though, is that you do believe there's a higher power.
Oh, there's no doubt.
If we look at, you know, all the evil that's happening in the world right now, there has to be an opposite equal force, right? So, and I think that we, and this is interesting that we touched on this, because in our last podcast, we actually talked about this as well. And we both, I mean, I myself was still like, okay, not entirely sure. Up until I did, I think it was last year when I was in Colombia for the third time, I connected with a shaman and I did the ayahuasca ritual. I did the toad ritual. I don't know if you listened to Hotbox and Mike Tyson, where he explained about the toad experience. He said, I met God. If you listen to him speak about the toad experience, that is exactly what I experienced. I met God. And after that...
What was God? An old dude in white robes with a white beard?
No, sorry? It's absolutely not. It's an energy field, and it's not a like a normal conversation, but I met...
So God isn't a person to you?
No, it's an energy field. And again, I think what the experience that a lot of... if you listen to people that had that used the toad, I mean, have you done ayahuasca or the toad?
No, I've thought about it a lot, but no, I've never done ayahuasca. I don't really fancy throwing my guts up in the Amazon rainforest. If you could make it easier for me, give me some luxury and just a pill.
So this is exactly where we come back to the topic, because yes, money, financial freedom. I understand that is your main purpose to.
That's my mission.
Your mission. Yeah. However, isn't it great to be like have 75% of everything? I want to elevate my subconscious. I want to elevate my conscious. I want to get closer to God. I want to find God. I want to find myself. I want to elevate and be the best in every single spectrum of life, which means financially, physically, emotionally, spiritually. I don't want to just have one spectrum. Like, you know, and Tate as well talked about this, like, in the podcast, where some people think, oh, just because Bill Gates is Bill Gates and he did Microsoft, he has like money, he is high value. I did a podcast with Sadia Psychology. She described amazingly, because everybody talks about high value. She really laid down all like everything that's high value to her and high value woman, high value man, which means different things for everybody, of course. But generally speaking, you can be amazing at one thing and really suck at one thing. I think when you have money and you're fat, there's no reason why you should be fat. You can spend money on a personal trainer to go to the gym. You can work on your physical body. You can try to find God. You can try to understand how to tap into your subconscious through meditation. At least try. At least try to be a better human being, whether that's for God or whether it's for your personal reasons. But I truly believe if you want to make the world better and if you want to educate people, even when it's on finances, I do believe that we need to look at different spectrums than just one or two.
Yeah. Again, this boils back to understanding what your purpose and mission in life is. So I to a certain degree agree with that, but I go back to the same thing. You can do anything, but you can't do everything. So if you try and, you know, I've mentored hundreds of thousands of people on building wealth. And what's the first, I want multiple streams of income. So I'm doing Amazon and e-commerce and I'm a doctor and I'm a dentist and I'm doing a YouTube and a podcast. That is the quickest way to go broke, because you cannot juggle that many things. You are a human. You are not, you know, a superhero. So when you have clarity on your mission, vision and direction, then you can work out what's the best way to get there. So for example, if you want to build wealth, it's good to live long. So you can, and the great thing about wealth that people don't understand, money doesn't buy you happiness. No, but it buys, because people think the best things in life are free. No, they're not. The best things in life are fucking expensive. The best things in life are not free. The best things cost a lot of money. You want to travel the world? You want freedom to say no when this country wants to lock you down, but Dubai aren't? That costs a lot of money. So ultimate freedom and the ability to say no or fuck you is expensive. So, you know, this is what I want to teach people, because people get money all wrong. They don't understand it. So it does having good vital energy help me in my mission? Yes. So I'm going to focus on my, and I'm doing that as I get older. It gets harder for me to maintain muscle and avoid having tits, basically. So I'm
good shape, my friend.
I'm doing all right.
How are you doing?
I've got a bit of a dad bod, but I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
So I am using my time, my knowledge, and my money to invest in my health. So that's number one. You know, is having really good knowledge going to help me in my mission? Yes. So you know, I might read more. So depending on, you see, money, it makes a great servant but a terrible master. So whatever it is that's most important to you, money is an amplifier and an enabler of that. In all this shit chat you've got around at the moment about what is a high value man and what is a high value woman. Yeah, people seem to agree a high value man is someone who's got their finances in order, you know, their health and fitness in order, and their mindset in order. You know, that seems to be pretty common. They're three good things to have in order. But just because someone is fat doesn't mean they're useless. All it means is they haven't got the knowledge or the focus or the importance on health. It just means that they've got the focus and importance elsewhere. By the same token, you've got Warren Buffett, who's got a meaningful mission. He's 92 years old. And he just eats burgers and drinks Coke all his life.
Does he really?
Yeah. Yeah. McDonald's every day, drinks Coke. He's one of the main shareholders in Coke.
Or is that what the media and the system wants?
Well, look, that is a good point. Do you really know that the information that you're being fed is true? That is a fair point. And, you know, maybe, you know, we should probably all do our own research and fact check.
Because, I mean, you know about stem cell transplantations, like a lot of the wealthy do that. Now it's being talked about a little bit more. Tony Robbins, a lot of other people, like, there's a lot of research about it. And this is another thing, like, when you have the money, you can invest in those things.
Yeah.
You can elevate your health to, but again, it is accessible. Just like money is accessible for everything, for everybody, health as well. Like, you can genuinely, like, you can get your ass to the gym. You can get into movement. You can get into shape. You can be a better human being, right? When I got out of the military, I was an absolute asshole. I didn't know how to communicate properly in normal society. I had to really, like, reevaluate, like, how to properly communicate. Started studying psychology. You know, I was, like, going in a whole different direction, trying to be part of the system, trying to educate myself through the traditional system, only to realize that after graduating in psychology, this was not the path that was laid out for me, right? So then, I mean, that whole entrepreneurial journey really took off. And I went all in, traveling the world. My best friend passed away, like, mid-30s. I said, go explore, go do this thing, like, go. And I went all in on e-commerce. And we had this talk in our previous podcast. Point is that I have really understood, in order for me to help people, which I do coaching and like, really, like, narrow down to be close to God and to fulfill my purpose, whether it's financial freedom or being a healthy and net positive individual for society, we need to talk about all these different spectrums. That's why Life Talk is talking about different categories: business, love, health, money, everything. Because I cannot, and again, that's a very conscious choice. I cannot just zoom in into one and then not talk about the rest. That's why also when I started Maze Therapy, which is my other company, which is the fitness and coaching, it merged into mind psychology, but it was first fitness. I just couldn't, like, see it just going to that direction. Just focus on body and how you look and for who. And I don't, you haven't met me 3 years ago, but I was like almost two times the size, and it wasn't necessarily healthier. Right? Like, so now I'm all focused on, like, biohacking health and making sure that I can be the best version of myself in order to help other people. And I have to stay close to God, and I encourage anybody to do the same, because there's so much evil in the world right now. We live in such a degenerate society. How are we even with our partner? How do we find the right partner? I attracted you as well. We talked about it, the wrong partners a lot of times. You know it, and whether you're Jeff Bezos or you are Joe Schmo, if you attract the wrong partner, it can destroy you.
it can land you in jail. So first of all, how do we teach young men or young women to find the right partner? Oh, wait, maybe I need to be close to God. Maybe I need to have strong values. Maybe I need to be in shape. Maybe I exert the right energy. So we need to talk about these things. We cannot just ignore them.
I think whatever you want in life, you have to be it to receive it. So for me, I always question, what is the purpose of life? And what are the laws of the universe that I can leverage in my favor to get the most out of the short time that we're here? I'm always asking these questions. And I think there are some simple laws. For example, the universe is you. And what I mean by that is, for example, we think that people are as they are. People are not as they are. People are as we see them. So we have our unconscious filters, biases. You know, if you've been abused your whole life, you think the world is evil. If you've had the most amazing, supportive and loving upbringing, you think the world is beautiful. What is the world? The world is not what it is. The world is how we see it. And it took me a long time to figure that out. You know, for example, people say all the time, don't they? Oh, I just want to be loved for who I am. But if you don't know who you are, how can you be loved for who you are? Oh, I'm just going from shit relationship to shit relationship. All I ever seem to get with is psychos. Well, have you ever looked in the mirror and looked at the common denominator in all these psychos? Yeah, because I went through this. I said to my mum, why am I getting all these psychos? She said, what's the common denominator? That's me. So, you know, this rhetoric out there right now, which I think is really useful, is that you are responsible. And then when we blame and complain and justify everything, all we do, we attract what we are. So instead of, you know, trying to chase women, what about you be someone that women want? Mm-hmm. You know, instead of, you know, hoping and praying and trying to find good partners, what about building a meaningful business and being a useful human that has value? And I think in this instant fix social media society, we're not going through the full process. You know, diamonds are formed under pressure. And so if you want a better life and you want more things, whatever that is, you have to be it to see it. And if you want to attract it, know that the universe is a mirror. It reflects back not what it is, but what you are. That for me has been a great life lesson.
You had quite tumultuous relationships as well. I love what you said, and I really want to tap into that because a lot of people listening struggle with that. I did a poll recently, and a lot of the feedback that we got back was, how do I find that partner that is supportive, that can help me in who I am and elevate? Because it can literally do both things. You can have a partner, just like it happened to you, just like it happened to me, that can genuinely keep you down. I'm not going to mention names. I've been in a relationship where I absolutely loved her to death. It was like, really? And I was living, I would completely pause my businesses. I was living off my rental income from my properties, which was okay. But that was not a woman who would let me do my thing to help people to elevate who I am as a man. She was keeping me comfortable. So that is not the right woman. And you need to ask yourself these questions, because especially if you want to be this, you have a vision of who you want to be, whatever that is, your partner can either enhance that or break that. So it is extremely important that if you take full accountability, full responsibility of what you attract, then you can start to see the change. And a lot of times, including myself, we were focused on the wrong thing.
Yeah, I think if you think about attractive qualities in a man or a woman, I would certainly say clarity is one of them. you know, clarity gives a sense of confidence and self-assuredness and mission. And I think that's, it seems to be a relatively universally attractive quality in a man or a woman, in a partner, business-wise or in relationships. So the more clear on who you are and what you want, the more you're going to attract the right type of partner for you, because we're all different. So I think that's one thing. There's a couple of things here which I think people are quite naive about. No one is put on this planet to fix you. And so many people are looking for a relationship because they just want the perfect relationship. You know, they want the fantasy romance and they want someone to be, do and have and serve them. No one is put on this planet to do that. And if you ask everyone what they want in a relationship, I think they go about it the wrong way. They're like, well, I want this and I want that and they've got to be this and they can't do this. But what about if you flipped it? And what about if you looked at what you can offer as well as what you can give? Sorry, as well as what you can receive. Because a relationship is a partnership where it's fair exchange. It needs to be fair exchange to be sustainable, which means there's some give and some take. And too many men are like, well, I'm on this mission and this is what I want. And if you're going to hold me back or do this or do that, you know, then we're not going to last. It's not. This is why these 21-year-old kids who are gobbing off on podcasts about relationships don't know shit. Ask an 8-year-old couple who've been together for 60 years and have got a leather face. Ask them what it takes to maintain a good, sustainable and long-term relationship. And you have to give as much as you take. You know, you have to sacrifice as much as you demand. And again, we're in this instant quick fix, Instagram filter society where people think they can have all the upside without the downside. Like, who are you? How arrogant and naive are you to think you can have all the good and none of the shit?
Well, what are your thoughts? Because you mentioned like young guys like in their 20s, like talking about relationships. What are your thoughts on like the fresh and fit kind of like crew? What they were talking about, like, which is a lot of this.
I like to speak about on what I know, and I only like judge people when I've met them. So I'm not going to judge an individual, but I did see fresh, fit, and full of shits. How old is that guy?
I think he's in his 20s, though.
Right, and I saw him saying, "I know what women want." Mate, fucking grow up. You do not know what women want. You are 23 years old. You have no fucking idea. You think you know, but you don't. And do you know what's dangerous in this world? A little bit of knowledge. Because with a little bit of knowledge comes arrogance and hubris. Now, look, I think we can learn from everyone. I'm not a better person than this guy. I'm a different person. I don't judge. But if you're on a podcast shouting and screaming about how to have the perfect relationship and you're fucking 21, fuck off. You do not know shit. That's my personal opinion. But I don't know the guy. And here's what I know also about social media. In long form, deep contextual content can be taken by someone and clipped into 7 seconds.
No, 100%.
And so this could have been completely out of context. And so until I can fully discuss the matter in a long form with the person, I won't judge. So I'll be more generic. If you're 23... and you are making out that you're an expert in dating, no, you're not. If you're 83, yes, you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's my opinion. If you're fucking broke teaching people, I see people on TikTok all the time, just copying other people's content. They're 21, they're broke, and they're making out, you know, they're trying to sell courses. I've been doing this for 17 years. I've seen cycles.
You went through it all.
Yeah, look, I've still got a lot to learn. Yeah. I can learn from someone who's 60. I can learn from someone who's 80. But, you know what you're good at and know what you're not and cut the bullshit.
Also one thing I want to...
What are your thoughts, by the way, on this
fresh and fit? One thing I don't want to say, like, just hold that thought. I want to say that it's also important, like, where you come from. You had to be, like, if you are already, like, coming from, like, wealth, like, we are not the same. Like, I came from nothing.
Right. So did I.
So did Joe. So that's why we resonate. Mm. But I sometimes sit with somebody like, you know, they have nothing to talk about. They have no, like, so that's another thing where it's not just about money. It's not just about money. It's about how did you make the money? How did you had to go lose it all, or you came from nothing? You had to work for it. You had to like make that network, that connections, you know, fall, make mistakes, and you get that grift, you get that character. You don't get that character if you build up in a trust, if you grow up in a trust fund family. So that's a whole nother metric that we can talk about.
Mm.
Coming back to the Fresh and Fit, in their defense, I have great respect for the fact that they have an open conversation with these OnlyFans models, and they actually talk about the degeneracy of it, and that a lot of these women, they talk about like, oh, I deserve the high value man, this, that, that. And they're really red pill, right? They're like, hey, wait, you talk about all this you want, but you're out there on social media completely naked. Do you think that a high value man would want to settle down with you? I think that's a good question to ask. I think it's really good to have this open conversation.
I mean, what is a high value man? Is that not, well, that just sounds like arrogance to me. Like anyone who calls himself a high value man.
Well, that's what these women say, right? So they come on that podcast. They say, I want a man that makes more money than me. I want a man that's high value. I want a man that, because that's that everybody talks about.
But again, they're going about it from what they can get rather than what they can
get. But are they in their 20s? Are they maybe inexperienced? I agree with that. I hear you. However, I do like when people always have an open conversation with each other. And is it good at when somebody proclaims to be an expert on something?
No.
I mean, I think we all need to have a conversation. As an example, I had a podcast with Sadia, which happened to be my number one podcast, listen to podcast now right now, even more than the one with Wim Hof, the one we did, the one we did with Sajguru. It was so talked about that a lot of OnlyFans girls reached out to me. They said, oh, this is disgusting. Like, this is very...
So what was popular about it?
Why?
What was discussed?
Because she basically outlined why a lot of women that say they want this kind of man while doing X, like, which is OnlyFans or you know, showing themselves a certain way in social media,
they have to do
some expectation management.
Yeah, well,
what she did as a woman, as a, by the way, I have great respect for Sadia. I think she's absolutely incredible. And basically narrowed down that conversation, and also because everybody talks, like I said, everybody's talking about high value. What is high value? So she said, well, it's not just about money and health and being, you know, successful. It is also about not being accessible. I look back at a picture from Mykonos where I stand with Dan Bilzerian, and I'm like, I'm looking at that version of myself. I'm like, I wasn't high value back then. To my peers, I was the top G. To my peers, I was the man, because they saw me with all these models with Dan Bilzerian. I thought that was the shit. But now looking back at it, I'm like, no, I was a piece of shit. I really was. I thought that was the weaker, low frequency version of me. And again, who was I? I was 24. Like you said, I was in my early 20s. I thought I was the shit, but I have so much to learn. I still do. And now I understand that one woman that sees you for who you are, that's going to be there for you, that want to see you elevate, that's truly what you need as a man that wants to get out there and fulfill his purpose. So you have to be extremely careful. We have to talk about this because it can break you down and it can elevate you. So what I did when I got those messages from his OnlyFans girls after the podcast with Sadia, I said, well, you know what? Let's talk about it. Let's have an open conversation. I want to hear your side of the story. And that to me is important, where you have a mature dialogue talking about their perspective, how they see the view of the world, their perspective on what they think that, okay, I'm an OnlyFans girl and I think actually I deserve this and I'm going to get it. And why? Let's listen. Let's see what they have to say. So I invited them on my podcast. We're going to have a conversation soon. And that resulted all after the podcast that I was signing.
Yeah, I mean, I would be fascinated to listen to that conversation. I think, again, clarity is attractive. Yeah. So would I want to be with someone who puts their entire self out on Instagram for the world to see? Absolutely not. But do I know men who are attracted to wealthy and successful women and are quite happy to support a wealthy and successful woman? Yes. So I just think it's clarity again. What is your role? Can you expect to put yourself out for the world to see everything about you and have the type of man that wouldn't like that? No. Could you do that and have the type of man that would be okay with that? Yes, you could. So I just think some people are just a little bit delusional about what they are and what they can realistically get. For me, you know, we're all different. But, I don't want the world to see a naked, my wife naked.
There you go. So, and I ask anyone, at least I asked anyone in my circle, we're in Marbella, we spoke in this car, we actually talked about this. No, nobody will. I mean, we might like it, short term, whatever, but do you think we're going to wife somebody that's completely naked out there and talk to some random dudes online and showing like everything? Like that's like somebody's wife, somebody's daughter. Like it's not about the money. It's like I love my woman to be more successful than me and make more money. I will encourage her. Absolutely. I don't see that as a threat. I don't think that's. But what I do see as something that I just don't align with is my woman being an OnlyFans girl. I just don't see that for my life.
For
my children to look at that. Oh, that's mommy. Like there's literally children being bullied at school because of this.
Yeah.
You know. So.
It's a bit of a paradox because a market exists if there's demand. And, you know, do I respect someone who's prepared to put themselves out there and be entrepreneurial? Yeah, I do. And who am I to say what's right and wrong about how they live their life? You know, that's my view. But, you know, if they're single and lonely and they've got a delusional expectation of what they can have, that's probably not going to change, in my humble opinion.
Rob, it's also sad. It's sad because
it's sad.
Rob, 35, 40.
But it's sad.
They're childless. They have no connection to God. They're like, and it's very different for men. You know, like when we age, it's like, whatever. We age like a, you know.
Like a fine red wine.
Yes.
But not with pickled vinegar.
So when you are 35, 36, and you're still single, having this delusion, because you have either then two choices. You're going to settle, right? Which is for some bum that like pays for OnlyFans, or you still have this idea that a successful guy that's a leader and out there alpha is going to settle with you. And then like, you know, and it's sad. It's a sad reality. It's a degenerate society. And that's where I come back to the conversation earlier. I think we need to get closer to God. I remember back when we talked about this in our previous podcast, back when OnlyFans started, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I can actually have a platform for my fans. I signed up. I didn't know it was going to be like, you know, fully naked, this, that. I think that wasn't even the intention of the
OnlyFans.com/Jesse for some naked
sections. I thought, was that the intention of the founder? I'd love to check that out. But it went to that direction and I stopped using it. Because I just didn't, the same as I don't want my wife to see me like that. So it's just.
Let me ask you a question then on topic, but slight segue. What do you think of this proliferation of, you know, men having hoes in different area codes and, you know, a man can have 10 women?
That's a really good question. I think if the woman consensually agrees, if the woman that you're with says, hey, I like that you are on your path, on your mission, and you have, especially like according to the Quran, I did Ramadan for the first time this year. I've read a lot about it.
So you've converted to Islam?
No, I have not. I'm a Christian.
Right.
I, however, strongly am reading and understanding more and more about Islam, and I want to understand the full spectrum of it so I can find my truth.
Yeah. And so sorry, carry. Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
So understanding that spectrum of religion and being a good man and you take care of them, or how it's also written in the Quran, I think that's great. You can have multiple women. However, if we want to play, if we want to use women without them knowing, I think it's wrong. I think it's morally and ethically wrong. And then we have to ask ourselves, okay, what is, am I fulfilling some insecure desires? What am I fulfilling? Right? And then we go back to purpose. So it's really about context here. It's for me personally, if you ask me direct, what do you want? The 24-year-old version of me would say, I would love to have multiple women, which I had back then. Right now, I'm a one woman man.
Yeah, I imagine quite a vacuous, empty life if you've got all the women you could want visually, but no one to deeply connect with. That to me feels like a very scary existence.
How about yourself? And I know you have a very supportive wife who lets you do your thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm 44 and I've been with my wife 17 years.
Wow.
So I'm not 21 and I've fucked three women and I think I'm an expert. But at the same time, I believe I have so much more to learn about relationships. I'm far more comfortable talking about money. But I'll go there because you asked me.
Yes.
I think we have a fantasy delusion about what relationships are. And I think whether it's the man or the woman, we have the fantasy. The woman might want the dream white wedding, you know, and the man that takes care for her, like, you know, like the hero in Cinderella or whatever, the Prince Charming.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you hold on to that fantasy, you're going to be a very unhappy spinster. And conversely, yeah, I want a woman who'll do this, that, and the other, and let me do this, that, and the other, and, you know, shut up and clean and, you know, like, oh, blah, 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 whatever. I'm not going to go too far into this, but, and meaningful relationships are like a business. They take constant work. And there's a honeymoon period for sure, which is amazing. And you have to enjoy it while it lasts because it doesn't last. And then there are challenges and difficulties. Because when you fall in love with someone, if you think about the modern version of love, what it is it's delusional infatuation. We have all, I'm assuming, infatuated over someone. Wow, look at this amazing human. They are amazing. They are beautiful. But they slurp their tea, they fart, you know, they have all that, they have annoying tendencies, you know, they have this set of downsides, which they're not, some people hide their downsides like narcissists, but other people don't really necessarily hide their downsides. You just can't see them because you're blinded by the beauty. And so to maintain a long-term relationship is for me, 17 years into a long journey, let's see, you know, we could come back in a few years and I fucked it all up. You know, you never know, do you?
That's life.
But my relationships would be good and bad and over, and they would go from honeymoon to finished because I had this delusion of a woman being everything I wanted her to be. And as soon as there was a flaw, she was gone and I was on to the next. And in a way, I would sort of commoditize women, which is why this, oh, yeah, you know, the Dan Bilzerian life isn't all it's cracked up to be. Because all you do, you know, when you've got when you eat food in a buffet, you can waste the food because there's a fucking abundance of it. Whereas if you eat very expensive, fine food, you don't waste it. And so if you have this abundance of vacuous but volume-based relationships, all it does is feed your emptiness. That's my experience. But we have this delusion of what a relationship should be like. We have a honeymoon period and then we're like, oh, fuck. She does this, she does that. She's messy. She's unorganized, blah, 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 blah. And she's got to discover all your downsides as well, which you've been hiding. And if you can look at someone after that, let's call it the bedding in period. If you can look at someone after that and love them for who they are, I think that's what love is. And then you've got to continually work on it. You've got to work on variety, spontaneity. You go through different stages. You have children. You know, Jesse, when we had children, it was the hardest time in my relationship and we nearly broke up because I went from being numb. I'm a bit more like the woman traditionally in a relationship. I'm emotional. I'm needy. And my wife's a bit more like the man. She's like, well, you know, I will gaze into her eyes and she'll be like, what are you staring at, you weirdo? And she'll be like, well, I love you because I married you, didn't I?
Yeah.
And so when we had my son, all of a sudden, I went from number one to number three in the pecking order. It was my son, the dog, then me. I had a real, real hard time with that. And I endured a lot of loneliness. I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know how to express it and communicate it. I'd not experienced it before. And it takes a lot of work and a lot of communication and, you know, asking for what you want and making sacrifices and negotiating and making agreements. And so that's my journey that I've been on, and they're my discoveries. But, you know, we're going to go through different stages. The kids are going to leave. You know, we're going to get to the point where we're both old looking, you know, and we're going to go through all this evolution.
That's beautiful, man. I think I've never heard you talk about it before. So I appreciate you opening up about that, because I think a lot of people, I mean, we all go through very similar stories in the end. So that's why I think it's so important to have these conversations. A very important topic I want to talk about that you are very knowledgeable about, real estate. Last time we spoke, I was, I think, in Russia. You said, oh my God, Jess, I can't wait to come see you. And, you know, and
I'm not going to fucking Russia.
I'm buying a penthouse here. I end up buying some land here. I end up...
here as in Marbella or here? As, yeah.
Yeah, I got my office right here. So a lot has been changed in the past 2-3 years. You had, I mean, even back then when I spoke to you, I had no idea that this was going to be the place that I would settle.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting that now you've chosen to come here, not even knowing this.
Yeah.
Because God knows you might have still thought I was traveling the world or whatever. Mm. But tell me about, like, why have you chosen Marbella to visit? Because it wasn't because of me. Maybe it was. You haven't told me.
I'm not that much of a stalker.
Is that?
Hey, who is? Just follow Jesse around the world. I'm sure plenty of women do. But, yeah.
So is it because I know you're invested in real estate, you're diversified. Tell me.
So the reason I'm in Marbella this time is because my wife was absolutely desperate for a holiday, because obviously with lockdown, it was difficult to travel.
Yeah.
But I know Luke here. I know some guys from the war room here. Luke was setting up a studio. Yeah, for me, I think a great life is to be able to merge your passion and your profession. Like, what sort of life is it to work 8, 10, 12 hours a day doing something you hate, earning someone else money, and then what you get, you give half of it to the government, hoping to have some kind of free time and money, only to get to the end of your life realizing you've got no time and money? You know, what kind of life is that? For me, that's no kind of life. So I've been fortunate and strategic in that I've built a life whereby I can work and travel simultaneously. So I come out to Marbella. I'm here doing some podcasts. So this travel and the accommodation is a business expense. You know, my wife is the event manager. And then obviously I just have to pay personally for the children and you know, and they're part of it. So I try and live my life like that, where travel is a part of work, but it's also a part of freedom. And that was actually a negotiable with my wife, because I don't think relationships are going to last when one person has all the power. I just don't think it's going to last. And my wife loves holidays. Like, who doesn't? Well, I don't. I don't like holidays. I am white and ginger and British. I could have been a Scottish king, but I'm definitely not made for the sun. I don't like the sun. I don't like the beach. I'm scared of the sea. I'm not good. So
it's a mess.
Pretty much when, like, as I got older and I was dating, I just realized the best way is to just lay your cards on the table. I used to just pretend to be whatever the girl wanted so I could get her. But now I'm like, well, look, this is me. I love this. I hate this. And I pretty much straight up second date said to my wife, I hate holidays. Is this a problem? And she's like, yeah, this is a problem. So we negotiated it whereby if we could travel the world and we could, you know, experience life, as long as she allowed me to be able to do some work. So I'm here in Marbella and I'm writing my book. And we're, you know, I'm doing this, I think, my third podcast while I've been out here.
Yeah.
So I used to go to Cayman every year and we used to run mentoring out there. I do public speeches, you know, in different parts of the world. So that's one of the reasons I'm out in Marbella specifically. And, you know, there's so much, as you know, as a sort of, in a way, a previous digital nomad, there's so much of the world to see. But it's a taxable write-off. You know, if you've got a family, you can, you know, my friend Grant Cardone, you know, he homeschools his kids and they all jump in the jet and they travel the world with him. And I think that's a great way to race.
Yeah.
Far better that than seeing your dad for 3 hours a week. Far better than that. You know, a lot of people are working hard, you know, in the civil service, the public service, in the military. And they're working so fucking hard and yet they don't get to see their family and their relationships break up. That's no kind of life I want to live. So, you know, we've got a lot of travel booked and I will make sure that it's a passion-profession merge so that, you know, I'm going to America soon and we're interviewing Patrick Bet-David and Neil deGrasse Tyson and I think we've got one more good one lined up. I'm going to Romania to see Andrew in a couple of weeks. You know, and we're going to do a podcast there. My son really wanted to come, but my wife was like, you ain't going.
I love that.
So, that, you know, this is the way you really can engineer your life that way and strategically, yeah.
That brings me actually, I wanted to talk about real estate for a second, but before I forget, I saw a viral clip of you where you interviewed, I forgot the name, and you were talking about interviewing certain guests and spending, like you asked the guest, you said, would you spend 20K?
So my producer, Harry, he's like, Rob, you've got to stop talking about this. But fuck it, let's go there. What's the question?
So the question is like, you...
By the way, I got a lot of hate for that.
You got a lot of hate?
I got a lot of hate for saying, So basically, I was being interviewed by someone who... he's my friend, I like him. Yeah. But I didn't believe what he was saying. And that's okay. We can have discourse and not hate each other. But basically, I said, who's your top guest? Who's your go-to guest? Who would you love to have on your show? And he said either Conor McGregor or Joe Rogan. And I said, as an entrepreneur, would you pay 20 grand to have them? And he's like, no way. I'd only want to do it if it was free. And I said, bullshit. I said, what kind of entrepreneur are you? Like, would I pay Joe Rogan 50 grand to have him on my show? It's fucking done. Joe, if you're listening... I've got 50 on the table. Let's go. Why? Plus a box of chocolates. Why? Because life is short and meeting cool people is amazing. And I'm an entrepreneur and I'm a commercial guy and I want to get the most out of life and I love meeting amazing people. Now, would I love to interview Joe Rogan for free? Yeah. Would I love to never pay a guest? Yeah. But we're in a world right now where there's a select few people who are paying fucking big money to have guests on their show. So anytime you reach out to anyone now, they're like, oh, what's the fee? And, you know, some people want, Conor McGregor wants $500,000. And I know people who want 25 bags, 25 grand.
Yeah.
And then they're no one. And it's like, what the fuck? What the fuck? But Harry's like, stop talking about this, because if everyone knows you pay, everyone will charge you a fee. So just for the avoidance of doubt, for about 90% of my guests, I don't pay them and they don't want a fee. Because we want to have good, meaningful discourse that makes a difference. But if I'm faced with a commercial decision where I can pay someone and either get someone I wouldn't be able to get or get them quicker than I... So, you know when Andrew came out of prison?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Patrick Bet-David got him first.
Yeah.
Would I have laid down 25 to get him first? Damn straight. And Andrew, if you're listening, you know, we need to do more business together. But he chose Patrick first because obviously Patrick is huge. But I'd have put 25 down to get him first. Why not? So was this the question then?
Yes. Yeah, so he did the BBC first, right? We know how that turned out. And then...
PPC is...
Yeah.
What's that?
BBC.
Oh, BBC. Yeah. He did.
I think he did.
Yeah. Which is an outrage.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are so many great creators and interviewers. Hopefully people think like us, having really world-class conversations. And then there's the fucking BBC. Utter shit journalism. It's not even journalism. It's propaganda.
It's beautiful, though, that he did that and that he faced that challenge. He didn't back down. He didn't back down for nothing. I truly respect him for that. And I even wrote him a message on WhatsApp. I said, listen, I'm so happy for you now that you have a case, because now at least we can see the evidence. We can see the evidence presented. And, you know, we can see we can follow the process. Mm. Before this, there was nothing.
Yeah.
So I actually congratulated him. I said, this is great. You know, now, and the way he approaches it with so much, like intelligence and positivity, and also like fierce approach towards BBC, and then when he had that
interview after with Patrick Bet-David, it was so refreshing.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't chalk and cheese. So would you, let me ask you that.
He did say, after that,
yeah,
everybody after this, like from mainstream media, I want them to bring, what was it, 50K and a box of chocolates.
Yeah.
And I think if you're Andrew, I think you can do that.
Yeah.
You know, I also believe that organically, I think that when you have conversations within our circle, you know, we don't ask each other for money, to be honest with you.
Nah.
You know, like we have a very strong network. We know very like mutual similar people. So we have the same access.
Mm.
And then I think when you don't have that access, then you're going to pay.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing, right?
So see, I got a load of hate for this, which is amazing. Yeah, there was a video on YouTube. It's about 80,000 views at the moment.
Yeah.
Loads of people just saying, oh yeah, you know, we love you. Dodge's name is, you're raw, you're honest. Even though I didn't think he was being honest. Because I think if Joe Rogan is sat there, he can say, nah, fuck off. I'm not paying you 20. Of course you're going to, like, he's your God-tier guest. Of course you're going to. I got a load of hate because, you know, I had a chip on my shoulder. And you should never pay for guests. Would you pay the right money for the right person?
100%.
Fuck it. Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? It's a commercial decision.
Yeah.
It's an opening of doors. If you might be able to pay one person, and then that might open the door to a whole network of people you could never reach. Because
yeah.
Really, look, you keep saying this on this show.
We won't disclose what I paid Rob to be here.
My fee is big. My fee is big. But, you know, you keep saying money isn't everything. No, it isn't. You're right. Money is a tool.
Yeah.
Money is an enabler. It's a door opener. It's an accelerant. So why would I pay? I would pay if I could get a return. I'd pay if I could accelerate my journey, i.e. shorten the time, or I'd pay if I could open some doors.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't I? But the problem is when everyone pays, you know, no one wants to do anything. The difficulty in this industry is when you get to agents, because agents are like, yeah, you know, I can get a nice fee out of this. So, you know, they're the cock blockers in a way. I have so many really big people who we talk a lot on social, and we want to do work together, and then it goes straight to their agent, and then their agent just fucking blocks it. Or, you know, Jordan Peterson, you know, we know him quite well. He was on my show for free, and now it's like via his agent, even though we've been promised another show, $150,000. $150,000. Because, you know, that's what he is now.
Yeah.
And fair play, Bob. Am I bitching about that? No. Fair play to him. If I could charge $150,000 to be on a podcast, would I? You're damn fucking right. Why wouldn't I if I could attract that kind of value? But it's too risky.
There's also layers to it. If within our network, like, we have direct access to certain people. I won't disclose any names, but, like, you know, we're talking to some people out there where a normal person would have to pay. You know what I mean? We can directly get access. But then again, even like you said, like Jordan that you had personal access to, now even has an agent in between.
Well, he's bigger than God now. That's the thing.
Yeah.
When we had him, you
get to a certain level, like you said, Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Like that's a level that even within our network, we're going to have to pay off.
Yeah.
In fact, he's not even going to do a podcast.
Yeah.
You're going to come on his podcast. You know what I mean?
Well, this is the thing as well. You know, things are more desirable when you can't have them.
Yeah.
So as much as it's frustrating, it's just the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Last thing I want to touch on, because we're out of time.
It's lunchtime.
Yes, exactly.
We're going to get kicked out of Luke's studio.
Yeah.
Big shout out to Luke, shouldn't we? A shout out to Luke for letting us.
Big shout out, Luke. So we're smoking a cigar next week. We're going to do a podcast together with Luke as well.
So you're going to come here and smoke cigars and chat shit?
Exactly.
This is what the world seems to want at the moment.
Exactly. So last thing, real estate. Are you investing here in Marbella, real estate?
No.
Thinking about it?
No.
Why not?
Because I don't know the area. I really believe...
Do you want me to educate you on it?
Yeah. I mean, look, like I said earlier, I think self-awareness, wisdom, if you want to call it that, is knowing what you know and knowing what you don't. Knowing what you're good at, knowing your lane, knowing your skills.
Yeah.
And, you know, hubris is knowing a little and thinking that you know a lot. And here's what I know. The more local you invest in something, the more control you have over it. Management, maintenance, legalities, blah, blah, blah. Prices, sold prices. You get tipped off the best deals first. And we've spent 17 years building that in Peterborough, which is just outside London, whereby now there's essentially three big players in Peterborough who are buying up all the big real estate, and we're one of them. If I come to Marbella, I've got to learn all that shit all over again. And this is the thing that people don't understand about real estate. There are some things that you can learn that's learning about psychology, learning about interaction and communication and human relationships. This is a global language. Real estate is a local business. So I'm not really interested in going through that continual learning process, because you have to lose a bit of money at the start. You have to make some mistakes. So the way I've built my business is buy as much local real estate as I can and build a massive empire. And then if I want to travel the world and stay in the finest places, rent them. Because here's the thing. We all think, oh, wouldn't it be amazing to live in Cayman? Oh, that's my dream. So I went to Cayman and we rented this like freaking crib, and it was beautiful and we loved it. It was like 30 grand back then for a week or whatever. And by the time we went back the third time, we realized there's fucking nothing to do in Cayman. It's so small. There is nothing to do. But imagine if we'd spent 10 mil, you know, on a crib there or bought a load of real estate there. So I like to own locally and have vast amounts of passive income so I can rent globally. That's my plan.
I love that. Thank you so much for coming on, man. I appreciate that.
Always a pleasure.
So where can people find you?
So I have a podcast called Disruptors. I've written a lot of books. Probably the most popular one is called Money. Good to read that before my money book, Money Matrix, comes out. And then on any social, I'm on all socials. Rob Moore.
Love it. And by the way, he had amazing guests on as well. One of them is Floyd Mayweather recently, I think.
Yeah, we've had him twice.
Tate.
Yeah. Second time coming soon. Watch this space. Going to break the internet.
Yeah.
I just must not spar with him when I'm out there. Yeah. Apparently he's beating people up for fun, that. Like taking his anger out on shipping these people in.
I still spar with Luke, though. Luke, if you're listening.
Well, I mean, Luke was covered in bruises from sparring up with Andrew. Like bruises all over his arms.
Like,
yeah. Luke's a big fucker.
Yeah. I know. I mean, I like to be challenged.
Yeah.
So, but thank you so much. And we're going to
let's go and eat.
Have some lunch.